It looks like it's a font that's been run over by a tank, I suppose. It's just squashed and it's not particularly well done.
It is the internet's most hated font.
It's shite.
But this week on Download This Show, you're going to meet a man who's trying to save Comic Sans by rebuilding it.
Comic Sans would be a fart, where Comic New would be a symphony.
Plus, one service to rule them all, and by them, I mean passwords. We're examining the world of password managers. Aren't they the safest way to manage your security online? And we cover a lot of strange things on this show, but I think we might have a winner here. A mirror that takes a selfie for you.
The self-enhancing live feed imaging engine.
Seriously. Does it actually have useful applications? Well, get set to find out, because this is your weekly dose of technology, the internet and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and right across the nation, welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed. This is the show where we untangle your wired world on RN, on podcast, on SoundCloud, and also on RN TV as well. This is the radio show you can now see and watch and share individual topic discussions. Just all you need to do is head to RN TV. It's on the RN website, and you two can see just how utterly photogenic this week's panel is. He is a technology commentator and journalist. You can see his work on ZDNet. And if you do happen to be watching this on YouTube, you can see his amazing hat as well. Stilgarian, welcome back.
Happy Easter, Mark.
For people listening on the radio, describe what it is that you're wearing right now.
It's a rabbit on my head with a pink nose.
And did you do this simply because you knew that we were going to start filming Download from this week?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I mean, with all of the news about the Independent Commission Against Corruption this week, I've decided that straightforward, honest answers are the way to go.
Your bottle of Granger's in the mail. Now, joining him, next to him, is the editor-at-large for techly.com.au, Claire Porter. Welcome back.
I'm hatless, but happy to be here.
And it is great to have you here. Now, huge week in the world of information security, which is, of course, your bag, Stilgarian. Last week, we talked about the virulent bug, Heartbleed.
Well played.
And it seems we've had our first arrest. A guy named Stephen Arturo Solis Reyes was arrested. He's a 19-year-old. He's arrested for what? What exactly did he do?
Well, what he did is he did what many a hacker did as soon as news of Heartbleed broke, which was immediately try to see whether they could do something with this internet vulnerability. And he, amongst many, many people, have succeeded in extracting private data using the Heartbleed bug, in his case from the CRA, the Canadian Revenue Agency, i.e. their tax body, and it's appeared to have made off, as part of his proof of concept, some many hundreds of ID numbers of Canadian taxpayers.
Yeah, they're looking at about potentially 900, which is no small number. Claire, do you imagine we're going to see more of these arrests in the next couple of weeks?
Arrests, maybe. Hackers, more information being stolen. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Now, we are talking about passwords this week, and there are so many passwords that you need every day. You've got your banking, your phone, your email, and let's be honest, most of us reuse the same passwords over and over and over again, which it turns out is a terrible, terrible thing to do. What you should be doing is using a different strong password on every separate site, which is just not practical unless you use something called a password manager, which is a service that does what, Stilgarian?
Keeps hold of all your passwords for you. You see, the great thing about computers is they can remember things for you, including your passwords. So what a password manager does is essentially create one secure vault, and it keeps all your passwords in there under military-grade encryption, and you just have to remember one master password to rule them all, as it were. So you only have to remember the one, and because you only have to remember one, you can make it a really strong password, or even better these days, a passphrase. Because you know how we used to have that advice that you would make them complex with lots of weird characters and numbers? No, forget that. Make it as long as possible. Is the advice these days. So pick a phrase from, I don't know, a book, a memorable conversation, like when you broke up with your first girlfriend, what she
it's
said
not
as
me,
your
it's part. You in
I don't
capital
love
letters.
You anymore. .txt.
Yeah, yeah. If it's something that's unique to you and that is unlikely to be known by anyone else, that makes a good master password. But yeah, use the computer to remember your passwords for you. Then you can have them all being nice, random, really long passwords. If you can remember your password yourself, you're doing it wrong.
We are going to walk through all of the different services on offer, but I just want you to kind of paint a picture for me of what it's like to actually use one of these services. Does it pop up automatically? Because I know when you use your browser, it can store your passwords for you, and half the time you end up not putting in a new password every time. Is that how it works?
It depends on what service you're using, but obviously there are services that almost act like a portal, so you can basically access all of your services via the actual software. It doesn't look any different. Others will just automatically inject that for you every time you go to a site. So it depends on which software that you're using. But I think it might be worth adding that while all of this Heartbleed stuff is going on, these programs are excellent and they're great at storing your passwords, but really Heartbleed is a back-end problem. So even if your blockchain or your password storing software has already gone and changed your passwords for you, it may have to do it again, because really this is about the SSL certificate. So if Heartbleed and these back-end systems are not communicating properly, it means anyone can go in and get your ID even if you've gone and changed all of your passwords. This isn't a consumer issue, this is a back-end issue, and until Heartbleed gets fixed, nothing is going to help.
But where it affects consumers is that even now, coming up to the second week into the Heartbleed story, we're still getting major organisations putting their hand up and saying, oh yeah, we're affected too, we fixed it now. So that's the point at which you need to change your password. If you changed your password previously and they still haven't fixed the problem, all you've done is left your new password on the vulnerable service. And, you know, if I want to make a bigger consumer issue of it, it's really that there's been some shoddy work at organisations telling their customers what's going on. And this almost feeds directly back into the password manager thing, because the password manager I use, and I will name them, they're called 1Password, they move your password vault around your devices from your laptop to your tablet to your smartphone via Dropbox. And Dropbox is one of the organisations that handled this very, very badly. They were vulnerable and they just put up a blog post saying so. I mean, who reads the blogs of all of the services that they do business with?
No, something apart from tech journalists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, even then, there's so many of them. You know, you don't necessarily see that. And you know, guys, if something's going wrong, get a message out there fast, particularly security.
So let's talk about your choices in password managers. Why did you go with that service over, say, LastPass or some of the other ones that are out there?
Look, I've been using it for a while, and only a year or two ago, the choice was much smaller. And it had a good reputation. I tried it. I liked it. And once I've chosen a tool, I'll stay with it and keep using it.
Which is why he still has a MySpace page. See, what you don't see on the radio show is the death stare I got. But if you go to RNTV, you can see the death stare.
No, look, seriously, I always, even though I write about this stuff, I stay back from the bleeding edge. With security, that's particularly important. Mm. You don't want to necessarily have the latest and greatest thing, because it hasn't been out there long enough for people to find the problems with it and fix them. Look, I chose it because it had the feature set I needed. Other people say, oh no, but I really needed to work on Android as a password editor, and 1Password doesn't do that yet. Mm-hmm. You can only read your passwords on Android. And I'm lazy and didn't change.
Fair enough. Claire, can you break down for me the different password managers out there? What separates them? What are the different features?
I use Apple's Keychain. As you can tell, I take it very seriously, using the native software of my computers. There's obviously like LastPass. Forgotten some of the other names.
Oh, there's heaps. And that's the thing. It's kind of like a Cambrian explosion of everyone trying to get into this market.
Well, the one I find interesting is actually called Dashlane. I'm looking at it here, which will also keep your driver's license, identity cards, bank card details, pretty much anything you want to keep away from.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, many of these, if they're keeping your password under military-grade encryption, it's not much extra work for them to say, oh, and upload these photographs of your ID and stuff here as well. And that's actually, you know, for people who travel a lot, that can be a very handy feature.
You mentioned Keychain being a part of the Apple family. It strikes me that this is one of those services that really should become a function. It should become central to operating systems. How far into that process are we?
Really, I think the very beginning. As I said, we're seeing an explosion of variety as people trying to suss out what the market wants. Pretty much when this is at this stage, it's experimental, and then over the next couple of years, we'll see amalgamations and mergers and acquisitions and people actually maybe even agreeing on standards for this stuff. That'd be nice.
What are the standards? We don't believe in standards here at the ABC. No, I'm kidding. What are the sort of standards that you would like to see?
You really need a standard for how websites present their login information. So a password manager only has to know how to talk in two or three different ways. And that cuts down the testing load. The big problem with keeping things secure is that every little aspect has to be tested. So you need to keep it as simple as possible. And at the moment, you know, that's still an evolving area and people are having arguments about how it should work.
If Heartbleed has shown us nothing else, it's highlighted how poorly most companies' back-end systems are protected. So as much as we're going to see a lot of movement in these password storing areas, they're not going to help until businesses really start to take their security and encryption seriously. I mean, the fact is, a lot of the time when you're running a business, you don't want to think about IT and you don't want to think about security. That's why you employ security buffs to do that for you. But unfortunately, it's starting to look as though if there's no general understanding of how information is being stored across the business, it doesn't matter how much money you pay or how smart the people you are that you employ. Until you have a standard across the business where everyone has best practices for storing information and ensuring that customer information is stored properly, no password storing software in the world is going to help you.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that, but with more swearing.
Which, can I just say thank you for not employing here on the National Broadcaster. You are listening to the voices of Stilgarian, a freelance tech commentator. You can see his work in ZDNet Australia and the editor-at-large for techly.com.au, Claire Porter. Mark Fennell is my name. You are watching or listening to download this show here on RN or RNTV, which is up on YouTube. And Comic Sans. It is the font that looks like your computer forgot that it was a computer and instead pretended it was a child with a box of crayons. It's squashed, it's wonky, it's weird, and it's been the subject of a huge amount of online hate over the years. So one man, a guy named Craig Rosinski, has decided he's going to rebuild it for free and make a brand new font that fulfills the same role, a kind of casual font, but one that isn't quite as hideous. And he decided to call it Comic New.
I guess to a blind person, you would have to relate it as sounds. So, you know, Comic Sans would be a fart, where Comic New would be a symphony. I'm pretty sure most of the people that do hate on Comic Sans don't really know why they do. It's just built up. It's just gained momentum and it's snowballing now. You can't stop it. My name's Craig Rosinski and I'm a graphic designer who grew up in Sydney. I now live in Japan and I created the font Comic New. And it was a 3-year project. It all came about from the question, which was, could Comic Sans be saved? What does Comic Sans look like? It looks like it's a font that's been run over by a tank, I suppose. It's just squashed and it's not particularly well done. I do feel sorry for its creator, Vincent Conair, who just kind of created it as a throwaway. And then it was used by Windows in its, you know, operating system. The version that I created is just a little bit cleaner and a bit nicer to look at. Basically, it's a case of taking all of the characters that's in Comic Sans basically tracing over the top. So just creating a very faint version of Comic Sans and drawing the new forms, the new glyphs, the new characters over the top. And then once you've done the regular version, then you have to do the light version and the italic or oblique version and the bold version, without wanting to get too detailed. Letters like the round characters in a font, for instance, your O and your A, those the top and the bottom of those fonts need to extend a little bit further below what we call the baseline. So the line that the font runs along, you need to factor in all these little details to make it that, you know, at face value when you're reading it, you would never think about, but make a big difference in the readability of it. The thing I'm most proud about with Comic New is just getting the thing finished. But there is another character that I put in there that no one seems to have picked up on yet, which is basically combining the letter D and the letter G. It's based on an internet meme that went around a few years ago, which basically said, look, we don't need the separate letters D and G. We can combine them into the one. And the meme itself said, look, Alphabet, you can combine the letter D and G and it works better. You got to up your game, basically. So I'm going to include that character, and I've put it in there, but I don't think anyone's found it yet. I got in contact with the creator of Comic Sans, Vincent Conner, and I said, give me your feedback, whether it's good or bad. And he said, it should be more casual. But I then noticed a few days later, someone else asked him about it, and he said, it's shite. So that went straight up on the testimonials for my Comic New. I was very proud to have him basically criticize the saved version, the new version, and the criticism has come full circle.
Craig Rosinski there, and he definitely has no plans, Claire Porter, to redo Times New Roman. I asked him, he said he's definitely not. He actually thinks Times New Roman's a really well-designed font. Let's talk about whether or not you think Comic New is actually an improvement, is it?
Nope.
Really?
Yep.
Why? Okay, well, actually, first, because this is radio, just describe to me the distinguishing features between Comic Sans and Comic New. How different does it look?
It's slightly taller, it's slightly thinner, the characters are slightly closer together. That's about all I can gather from this new font, and it's still ugly as hell, and there is no way I'm ever going to use it.
It's like the slightly more model version. It's taller, it's thinner.
Anything that's adapted from the original Comic Sans is never going to work. Just give it up.
You do find yourself needing fonts that are more relaxed, that are more casual on occasion. There is a need for these fonts of sorts.
No, there are. And if you're actually someone who makes comic books for a living or a cartoonist, you need something that looks like a handwritten font. The problem is there are already thousands of them out there on the internet.
Do you think it's an improvement?
They're all rubbish. Like, look, it's why do people even care about this? It's such a stupid, narrow-minded hipster thing, this is. I mean, and quite frankly, all of the kind of grief that happens online, and as soon as anyone uses Comic Sans, they kick off about it and go, well, you're using Comic Sans. Half the time it isn't. They've just seen a handwriting top font and they're having a whinge about that. No, I think the people who object to Comic Sans have learnt a little slogan that they think makes it look like they're sophisticated and know about design. And all it really does is show that they actually don't know very much about typography and its history at all. It's the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Explain the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Two psychologists who discovered Dunning and Kruger, their names were, incidentally.
Convenient.
Yes, very convenient. They discovered the idea that people who are novices or don't know much about an area always overestimate how much they know. Essentially, you have to know enough about a field to realize you actually don't know very much. You know, all bad drivers think they're a perfectly good driver. Whereas you go to the other end of the spectrum, anyone who is really expert in an area is aware of what they actually don't know and will downplay, not to be modest, because they actually realise they're not at the highest of heights. That's the Dunning-Kruger effect. I think it explains much about how the entire world works.
I hate to break to you both, but Time Magazine disagrees with you both. Time Magazine's review of the font is that it's casual, it's free, and nobody will reflexively make fun of you for using it.
I'm casual and free too.
No one will reflexively make fun of Time Magazine for supporting the war in Iraq for years and years and years, despite countless claims to the contrary.
And this is worse, really, when you think about it.
Now, this got political.
Time Magazine can and has been wrong, and they are now.
Agreed.
I'm curious.
But with more swearing.
Now that we've opened up the can of worms that is font discussions, is there a font or design habit that you see repeated across the internet? It doesn't necessarily have to be a font. It could just be a common design thing that irritates you no end.
Absolutely. They're two, but
your challenge is to do it without swearing.
Okay, this could be tricky.
Take a deep breath.
There are two. One is extremely lightweight typefaces without sufficient contrast. And the other is essentially grey type on grey background. Again, it's related. It's all about low contrast. I'm sorry, but some of the people using the internet are older than 19 and would like to actually read the content rather than just take selfies of themselves.
If there is a design tick that irritates you no end about the internet, let us know. If you happen to be on Twitter right now, use the hashtag #DownloadThisShow. If you're on Facebook right now, we're facebook.com/DownloadThisShow. Or if you're listening on SoundCloud as well, you can leave a comment in the stream. Design habits of the internet that drive you up the wall, Claire.
I just really, the thing that bothers me is poor web design.
Just in general.
Just in general.
Okay, right.
I'm not really a typography Nazi. Pedant. I don't care. Like, I don't work
I don't
in
know.
Design.
If I was to rewind this podcast back 5 minutes ago, I would say you do care.
Helvetica or Garamond or Times New Roman. Like, those should be, like, your three choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything else should kind of...
Anything else.
Yeah. But, like, who am I? Like, I write in Word for a living. Like, 99% of my time, I don't care. What I think is really important, especially for people that are my parents' age, is comprehensiveness. And I think when you look across the web, there are so many experiences, even in our day-to-day lives, of really poor software design. Even things like ATM machines or parking, when you go and pay for your parking, like all of those things that we come across every day, it's a really poor experience, let alone like when we're actually sitting in our computers.
Mm.
Download This Show is what you're listening to. It is your guide to the week in technology, the internet and culture. We're in the studio with our panel this week, Stilgarian, a freelance technology commentator whose work you can see in ZDNet Australia, and Claire Porter, the editor-at-large for techly.com.au. Mark Fennell is my name. And finally here on the show, it may well be one of the strangest, stupidest things that we've ever covered, but given it is the year of the selfie, you kind of can't ignore it. Forget standing in front of a mirror with your mobile phone and doing duck face and taking a photo of yourself. There's now a mirror, or at least a prototype of a mirror, that will take a selfie for you. It's surprisingly enough called the selfie, which isn't just a word, that's actually an acronym, and it stands for...
The Self-Enhancing Live Feed Imaging Engine, the Selfie. The Selfie is constructed using a two-way mirror, a webcam, and LEDs that are embedded behind the mirror. Inside, we have a Mac Mini powering the facial recognition software and an Arduino controlling the LEDs.
Okay, so that's a thing now, mm-hmm. Claire Porter. Why? Is there any actual practical applications for this?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe when you're trying on clothes in a store, you know, there might be some benefit in creating an interface that can show you how the clothes look on you without you having to try them on.
So
I loathe to admit that there might actually be some kind of application for this horrible thing.
Point of sale, yeah.
Yeah, Siri, does my bum look big in this?
Yes. Yes, it does. Take it off. Now.
Okay. Now that we know, it's in prototype stage, so let's not...
Sorry, it's hard to take this seriously, isn't it?
It really
is. It's just someone has got a gadget. There's been some boardroom around which everyone's been scoffing at the marching powder, and they go, hey, selfies are really popular, and young people like fashion. Why don't we just stick a computer in it somehow?
All right, so let's crystal ball it. How would you like to see it used? Now, assuming that
landfill. Just get rid of this. This is not why we invented the internet.
I was going to say something that you could see your soul in. That would be great if people stood in front of it and then just went, everything I've done is wrong.
Lightweight consumer rubbish, and it's appalling that people make money out of this.
Follow-up question. How would you like to see it abused?
I can't say that on radio.
How would I like to see it abused? I don't know. I think it would be great if it was installed in like every boardroom everywhere and, you know, recorded without the knowledge of anyone so that we could actually get behind the scenes to find out just what kind of deviant behavior is being practiced by corporations.
Smart TVs can already do that.
I suppose, and webcams and mobile phones.
Yeah, we already have that technology.
I tell you what, you brought something up interesting earlier, which is how it can be used in retail and sort of point of sale environments. What are the sort of developments in point of sale technology that interest you, that you think actually will catch on?
I think it's interesting that retailers are now starting to recognise the benefits of ubiquitous data. I think if you can really start to understand loyalty behaviour outside of here's a couple of points every time you make a sale, to here's the kind of stuff that you buy and here's how we can properly incentivise customers on an individual level. I think if you can really start to understand how many times I walk past that pair of Bose headphones before buying them, it might be a way to give a more comprehensive understanding of consumer behaviour. But I'm a little sceptical of any system that you think you can just whack a mirror in there and all of a sudden people are going to want to buy more or spend more time in front of it. Like, I just think it's such a novelty. I think retailers are better off investing in things that help them understand customers rather than investing in novelties like this.
I'm agreeing with Claire this week.
Something weird is going on. Yeah,
the furious agreement show. It's like the anti-Q&A.
It is, but no gimmicks. Get onto this long-term value for customers. And there is a buzzword kicking around called omni-channel amongst the people who make the software that supports retail operations. You know, we had the idea that people look around in a bricks and mortar store and then go online to see if they can find it cheaper. We're actually seeing the reverse happening now, that people are exploring online to find the products and then say, yeah, but where can I go and actually hold this in my hand and make the final decision? We're starting to see better understanding of people's retail behaviour, so that, we know that this person, if they've bought a skirt, they will buy a belt or shoes or something the week later. So they can start automating, this skirt you got, here's some great shoes that will go with that.
Would you like some fluffy bunny shoes to go with your fluffy bunny hat?
The answer to that question is always yes.
Obviously.
Yes, see, Mark understands.
Mm. I've witnessed the power of a fluffy accessories today, so I know that they work.
Another example of that kind of thing is a hotel booking site that I use quite regularly. If I'm looking at hotels in a particular city and get interrupted, phone call, whatever, and I don't come back and finish the booking, about an hour or two later, I'll get a, hey, you were just looking at hotels in San Francisco. Did you notice these specials?
Ah, right. Yeah. I thought the message was going to be, did you just forget about me? Did you just leave this window open?
Well, that is the message.
It's a slightly more proactive version of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Less needy, more proactive.
All right. Download This Show is what you're listening to. Very big thank you to this week's panel, the editor at large of techly.com.au, Claire Porter. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And the always fun Stilgarian, whose work we can see not just in ZDNet, but a variety of
all
places.
All over the internet.
All over the internet and radio and TV and a number of other places. Would very much like to hear from you if you had any other design ticks that drive you up the wall. Let us know on any of the social platforms for the show, SoundCloud, Twitter or Facebook. And of course, as always, thank you for listening to another episode of Download This Show.